Welcome back to the fourth class of Ibn Ashir of the Murshid Mu'in. We've been going through, we've got through the first two classes with Aqidah and we've got through most of Wudu. So we'll continue from where we left off, inshallah. So we'll dive straight into it. أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم والصلاة والسلام على خير المرسلين وعلى آله وأصحابه أجمعين ولا حول ولا قوة إلا بالله العلي العظيم سبحانك اللهم لا علم لنا إلا ما علمتنا إنك أنت العليم الحكيم. So moving straight in, Ibn Ashir رحمه الله says, وعاجز الفور بنام لم يطل بيبصي الأعضاء في زمان معتدل ذاكر فرضه بتول يفعلوه فقط وفي القرب الموالي يكمله إن كان صلى بطلت ومن ذكر سنته يفعله لما حضر. So in these few lines, he's talking about the consequences of those who either do not do all of their wudu in one go, or miss out some element of their wudu, and how you correct this, if it is correctable or not. So he says, firstly, وَعَاجِزُ الْفَوْرِ, the one who is ajiz, who is unable to meet the condition of wudu being fawr, being immediate, which we called muwalat before. In other words, somebody who is not able to do his wudu in one go because of something that happens that prevents him from continuing, such as his water runs out, or he's forced to get up and do something in that moment. Bana, he builds on what he has done so far. So let's say he has washed until his face and then his water runs out and he goes to get some more water. When he comes back, he continues on from there. In other words, he goes next to his arms. مَا لَمْ يَطُلْ, so long as not a long time has passed. So you might ask, what does he mean by a long time? He says, here describing what he means by a long time, بِيُبْسِلْ أَعْضَىٰ, by the drying out of the limbs, by which he's referring to the arms, the feet, the face. في زمان معتدل, in a moderate climate, in a place which is not too hot, not too cold. So basically, if you are in a moderate climate of a place that's not too hot, not too cold, and your limbs have already dried out by the time you've got your water, and you have an ordinary sized limb, and the type of limb that you have, the oiliness or lack of oiliness is of a normal sort, is right in the middle where it dries out at a normal speed, then you've missed your opportunity to build on what you've done so far, and you have to start wudu again. Is that clear? So if you've started your wudu, you've done as far as your face, the water runs out, you go and get some more water, and by the time you come back, your limbs have dried out, then you have to start again. That's basically what he's saying here. ذَاكِرُ فَرْضِهِ بِتَوْلٍ يَفْعَلُهُ, or بِتُولٍ يَفْعَلُهُ, so the one who remembers its fard, the fard elements of wudu, he remembers that he's missed one of them out. For example, he thinks back and says, oh, my arms are dry. I didn't do my arms when I did wudu. يَفْعَلُهُ فَقَطْ, if it's بِطَوْل, if a long time has passed and he remembers, oh, I didn't do my arms, then he only does his arms and his wudu is okay. That is, if he left it out because he forgot about it or he became distracted. If he left it out deliberately, he said, oh, I'm not going to do my arms when I'm doing my wudu now, and left them, and then he changed his mind about it later, said, oh, you know, I should have done the arms, I'm going to go back and do it, it's too late. His wudu is invalid. If a long time has passed and he did it deliberately, he has to start again. But if he did it, he got distracted, something made him miss out that limb that is obligatory, then he remembered sometime later, he does only that limb if a long time has passed. وَفِي الْقُرْبِ الْمُوَالِي يُكْمِلُ, but if it is near or it is close in time in such a way that the condition of فور, of immediacy, of مُوَالَات is met, in other words, if it is a shorter time than the length of time it takes for limbs to dry out in a moderate climate, then instead of just doing the limb itself, say he missed out his face, he doesn't just do the face, he does the face and what comes after the face. He yukmilu, he completes his wudu from there in order to make sure that he has the order of wudu done correctly.
Because I had a question.
Yep, it's not.
That's okay. So what if I'm doing wudu and I dried myself with a towel, so my limbs haven't dried by themselves, but I dried them with a towel, but I forgot to wash my feet, for instance. Would I have to do wudu all over again?
No, it's talking about the length of time that passes rather than the fact of the limbs being dry or not. The limbs being dry or not is simply a way of telling you how long the time limit is.
Okay,
so it's understood. Nothing to do with the limbs being dry or the limbs being wet.
Okay, understood. Thank you.
Yeah. Was that another question by somebody? Oh, no. Well, I saw somebody's microphone switch on.
Yeah. Is it makruh to do it with warm water?
No.
To do with wudu? No, alhamdulillah.
Absolutely not. No, I mean, you don't want to make yourself ill. So if using cold water is going to be problematic for somebody's health, then you do use warm water.
Okay.
Even if it just makes you more comfortable. There's no... Yeah. In kana sallah, if in this particular instance that we're talking about, where you left out a fard element of wudu, and then you don't remember it until you're already praying, or you've already completed a prayer, what's the consequence for that prayer? He says, in kana sallah, if you have already prayed, batalat, your prayer is invalid. It is not valid. Because obviously your wudu would have missed one of the fard elements. And if wudu is lacking in one of the fard elements, it's not wudu. So you weren't in wudu when you prayed. So this would apply whether you're in the prayer or whether your prayer is complete.
What if you're leading the prayer?
If you're leading the prayer without wudu, then you would... get somebody else, as we're going to come to when we come to the prayer, istikhlaf, to take over. It's like remembering that you're not in wudu.
But what if I, for example, remembered afterwards, or remembered that I forgot to wash my
prayer,
feet?
Their prayer would all be invalid, yeah.
Okay, understood. Thank you.
Yeah. In kana salla batalat wa man dhakar. So if you remember sunnatahu, that you've missed out a sunnah of wudu, and we mentioned those are such as washing out your mouth or rinsing out your nose, wiping your ears. If you've missed out a sunnah and you remember, I didn't rinse out my nose. Yaf'aluhu lima hadar. Your prayer is valid. There's no issues with your prayer. You missed out the sunnah. That doesn't invalidate your prayer. But because of the strong emphasis placed on sunnahs, they're not something that's optional. You should rectify your wudu by doing that sunnah element on its own, washing out your mouth for future prayers. If you want to simply do that to make your wudu right. Or of course, you can always do your wudu again because it's recommended to do wudu, repeat your wudu for the fara'id prayers, each of the fara'id prayers. But if you simply want to make it right in terms of the sunnah, all you need to do is wash out your mouth with the intention of making up for that missing element. And your wudu will be okay. And any prayers that you already pray with it are fine. Any questions before we move on to the next bit? Bismillah. So faslun, then he says, section, nawaqidul wudu, sittata ashar, the things that break wudu. He says, section, the nawaqid, the things that break wudu, are sittata ashar, are 16 that he mentions here. Some people have added others apart from these, but these are the 16 that he mentions here. And they are pretty much comprehensive, in fact, if you look at them. Bawlun, firstly, urinating. Warihun, passing wind. Salasun, incontinence. Ida Nadar, when it is rare. So we'll explain what that means in a second. Wagha'itun, pooing, feces. Nawmun thaqil, deep sleep. Madhyu, which is pre-seminal fluid. Sukrun, drunkenness. Wa ighma'un, unconsciousness. Jununun, which is madness or lunacy or losing one's mind, insanity. Wadyu, which is post-urinal fluid. We're going to go through just the words of what the words mean, and then we're going to explain them in more detail in a second. Then he says, lamsun, which is touching with the hand. Waqublatun, and kissing. Wada in wujidat, and that is if wada in wujidat ladhatun adatan, if pleasure, stimulation, excitement is found, and that is when it is found in a normal way, when it is not something which is an abnormal situation, which we're going to come to. Kada, similarly in qusidat, in the same way, if you touch or you kiss with the purpose of finding sexual excitement or stimulation or pleasure. Iltafu mar'atin, a woman inserting her fingers inside herself, inside her vagina. Massu dhakar, a man touching his penis. Washakku, and doubt fil hadath, about whether you are in a state of impurity or not. Kufru man kafar, and the kufr of somebody who enters into unbelief. So we'll go through that now. This is divided up into really two types of things which break wudu. Those which break wudu in themselves, and those which break wudu because of something that they lead to. So the things that break wudu in themselves are called ahdath, and they are what emerges from the two waste points on the human body, the front and the back. Whether it's what emerges from those things in the usual course of excreting waste. So here that includes urine, which is when you wee, which comes from the front. And another two things which come from the front here are what's called pre-seminal fluid, and that is when somebody gets sexually excited and a thin liquid, usually with the men, a thin liquid comes out, but it is not in bursts and it is not thick like in the case of semen. And then there's something called wedu, which is a thick, almost semen-looking like liquid that comes after urination. That often happens in cold climates, that appears at the end of urine, which is called wedu. And then out of the back, there is wind. And when you go to the toilet, when you do a poo. So those are the basic main things that are called ahdath. All of those coming out of the body break wudu whenever they come out, except in certain cases, which is what he's talking about here, which is selas. So selas, which we translate as incontinence, is when any of these substances that we've just mentioned keep on coming out and you have no ability to stop them emerging. So the most common one that most people know about is urine. And that often happens when people get older, they can't stop the urine coming out and leaking. If this happens all of the time, in other words, the times when you have the prayer, throughout the times when it is prayer time, it doesn't break wudu. It's not even recommended to do wudu for each prayer. That particular thing, the urine that's emerging in that way, is not considered to be anything that you have any control over. So while if you pass wind or you go and do a poo, that will break your wudu. The urine itself is not considered to break your wudu at all, if it's all of the time or most of the time. But if it's most of the time, in other words, most of the times of the prayer, this doesn't refer to the times in the day when there are no prayers, which is no fard prayers, which is between Fajr and the time when Dhuhr starts, there's no prayers within that time. obligatory prayers. Outside of that time, the rest of the time, and most of the time, it doesn't mean constant, by the way, or all the time doesn't mean constant. It means that if you were to do wudu and pray, within that period of time, it would come out. You couldn't stop it coming out for that length of a period of time, that you could do wudu and pray without it emerging. That's what we mean by constant. So you can see how that can happen sometimes when somebody has an extremely bad stomach and they can't stop passing wind. So they can't stop passing wind for long enough to do wudu and pray. That would be counted as a form of selus if people have that thing. Can also happen with some people with medhi, with post pre-seminal fluid, where every time that they, you know, they're especially, you know, young men who've just reached puberty, where they can't stop being sexually excited, and this thing comes out whenever they are. Again, that could also sometimes be selus. If this is less than half of the time, half of the prayer times, some prayers, half the prayers it's there for, half the prayers it's not, in terms of the times of the prayer that you're going to do, then it does break your wudu, even if it's something which is a medical condition over which you have no control. Are there any questions about selus?
Yeah, I had a question, Sheikh. Yeah. So if somebody has this issue of selus, would they also have to change their undergarments as well before performing the salah?
Yeah, so I mean, if it's happening constantly, then what you should do is, before you come to the prayer, you either clean it up before you start the prayer, or without, you know, by using a cloth, you don't necessarily touch the private parts. And then whatever comes out after you've done that, you're not held accountable for. So you can, if it comes out while you're praying, or after you've cleaned up, when you haven't got, because you can't constantly be cleaning yourself up. You clean yourself up and then you go towards where you're going to pray. If you're going to do wudu beforehand, because you want to do wudu for each prayer, because you have salas most of the time, but not all of the time, then you're not held accountable what comes out after you've done whatever you can. But you can't, it is impure, so you don't just leave it on the whole day and ignore it. Yeah. So moving on to the next one then, we've gone through the ahdath, they're quite self-explanatory. The four main asbab he mentions here all involve loss of consciousness. And the reason why loss of consciousness is considered to break wudu is because you have no idea what you've done while your consciousness is absent. And there is a high probability or possibility of the emergence of wind having emerged, of you having passed wind while you were in that state. So it's considered, because of that high probability, that it breaks wudu in itself. And these are deep sleep. You can have different types of sleep. You can have sleep where you're still aware of what's happening around you. So, for example, if somebody calls your name, you're immediately awake to that fact. Or if some spittle drops from your mouth, you immediately notice it. Or you're sitting down while you're asleep. Or if your limb drops, it immediately wakes you up. That would be a light form of sleep. You're still, you know, pretty much aware or semi-aware of what's going on around you. That light sleep can be there for a long time or a short time. If it's a long time that you're in that situation, let's say 5 minutes or more, where you're just sort of, or even less than that, can sometimes be considered a long time, that you're involved in this light sleep, it's recommended to do wudu, but it's not obligatory. You might often say, you know, being a khatib, sometimes you can see people who are at the Jummah who fall into that sort of semi-sleep, especially when the khutbah is a bit boring on occasion. But that type of sleep, you'll often see people in the mosque engaged in that semi-sleep. Then there's a deep sleep. Now, deep sleeps can last for a short time or a long time, and that's when basically you lose awareness of what's going on around you. You could drop spittle from your mouth and not be aware. Your limb will drop and you won't notice. You'll be lying down most of the time in this type of sleep. That breaks wudu no matter how long it is. So that's why he just says nomun thaqil without talking about the time. Then you have just losing consciousness, ighma, and that refers to fainting, even if it's for just a moment. You stand up too quickly and suddenly you lose consciousness and then you're awake again maybe seconds later. That loses your wudu. Or comas, when you lose consciousness for a long period of time. Both of those break your wudu. And then he mentions junoon, which is insanity, having a break from your condition of sanity where you're no longer, your aql is no longer working in the manner that it should. You enter into almost like a different zone of consciousness, a different world. That breaks your wudu. Then the others here includes lamps, which I said is touching with the hand, and they consider that to break wudu, even if it's through light cloth. If you touch somebody with your hand and intend or feel sexual excitement as a result, your wudu is broken. Doesn't apply just to brushing them with your shoulder as you walk past, which can sometimes be unavoidable, for example, like on Hajj and things like that, when you're doing tawaf. It applies to touching with the hand. The next one here, he says, is hubla, which is kissing on the mouth. This is being referred to here. Well, kissing generally, but kissing on the mouth is considered to always break wudu. Unless they sometimes say that it's just a way that certain cultures have of saying goodbye, which has no sexual element whatsoever, in which case it may not. But generally speaking, the kiss on the mouth has always got some sexual element to it. Then he mentions touching the penis, which means touching it with the palm of the hand or with the inside of the fingers or with the sides of the fingers. If you touch your penis, even in the course of doing a ghusl or something like that, then your wudu, the wudu part of your ghusl, will be broken. By the way, this is when you're certain that you've touched it. If you're uncertain, you're doing the ghusl and your hand brushes that area and you don't think that it was with the inside. Doubt in this matter is considered to be as if it didn't happen. So this particular one is based on certainty, the touching of the penis that way, breaking wudu. And that's touching it directly, not, if somebody has an itch down there and they scratch through their trousers or something like that, that wouldn't break it, so long as the trousers are not super thin. Then he mentions iltaf, which is actually putting the fingers inside the vagina. If a woman touches the outside of her vagina, it does not break her wudu. It's only when the fingers are inserted inside. Then he mentions the next one, shak, which is doubt, which is being unsure whether you broke wudu or not. If you're unsure whether you are in a state of impurity or not, you don't know. You're half sure that you are, then you're half sure that you're not. It's completely, shak means 50-50, basically. You're completely unsure. Then that doubt itself is enough to break your wudu. Unless somebody is what's called mustankih, and that's somebody's always having doubts about these sorts of things. You have some people who are mustankih in their prayer, that they're always doubting whether they've done four or five rakats, or whether they've done three so far. They have, every prayer they're thinking, oh, how many rakats have I done so far? That type of doubt, if it happens regularly, which would mean once a day, in terms of you are being unsure whether you're in wudu or not, even though maybe you have done it, but you're just always having doubts about that sort of thing, you ignore it. If you know you did wudu, but you feel a sensation, in your bottom that you think, oh, did I pass wind or not? You ignore that. It's only if you know for sure that you've passed wind that you consider your wudu broken. Such doubts as well, you ignore. Unless you're pretty certain that that was passing wind, you ignore it. If your doubts happen after you start the prayer, You ignore them until you finish the prayer, and then you revisit it in your mind. You don't break a prayer simply when you, for this sort of 50-50 unsure about being in wudu. You break your prayer because you know you're not in wudu. Or you're pretty certain you're not in wudu, not if you're just completely unsure. Because that's where this sort of doubts would often appear in people who have lots of doubts. As for kufr, this applies to when a person is a Muslim and then they leave Islam and then they become Muslim again. Such a person is only required to do wudu, not ghusl, unless in the time that they were not Muslim, they engaged in sexual intercourse or had a menstrual period or something. But if somebody leaves Islam and then changes his mind and comes back to being Muslim again, that breaks your wudu, but it doesn't break your major state of purity, so you don't have to do a ghusl. If you become Muslim for the first time, then you have to do a ghusl, because you're basically in a state of full impurity, given that you've never done a ghusl with the intention of purification ever in your life before. وَيَجِبُ اسْتِبْرَاءُ الْأَخْبَثَيْنِ مَعْ سَلْتِمْ وَنَتْرِ ذَكَرٍ وَشَدَّ دَعْ. So now he's moved on, he's finished with wudu, and he's talked about the things that break wudu. And when you think about the things that break wudu, half of them are going to the toilet or related to going to the toilet. So he now says, well, what do you do when you go to the toilet? How do you clean yourself after you've been in the toilet? Because there's two conditions, preconditions for the prayer. One of them is taharatul hadath, which is being pure of the ritual impurity. And the other one is taharatul khabath, which is being pure of physical impurity. And physical impurity, the main one that gets on us, apart from blood when we have wounds, but the main thing that gets on us is what the residue after we've gone to the toilet. So he starts off with what you do with what comes out of the front for men. He says, وَيَجِبُ اسْتِبْرَاءُ. So istibra is looking to make something clear of something, make it free of it. So he says, it is obligatory, yajibu, to make clear al-akhbathain, the two akhbaths, the two places that are most impure, where the impurities come from, the most filthy. And that's obviously the front and the back, the place from where urine comes and the place from where feces comes. So the first part of that is with the place from where urine comes with the men. He says here, ma'salti wa natri dhakar, and with stretching out a little bit and shaking off the penis in order to remove the droplets of urine from it, was shadda da, but leave shadda, leave doing it with force. And the reason he says that is because you can damage yourself, you can cause yourself to have incontinence and other things, and have other consequences if you are too excessive in the way that you do this. You're thinking, oh, I've got to get rid of every last drop, and you're using a lot of force and you're doing all of that thing. You can cause yourself an injury. Don't do that. This deen is about everything being in the middle. You try your best, and whatever comes out after that, you ignore. Even if there's wetness after that, that you feel on your underwear after you've done all of that, you ignore it because you've done your best. وَجَازَ الْإِسْتِجْمَارْ مِنْ بَوْلِ ذَكَرْ. And istijmar, there's two types of ways of cleaning yourself, istinja and istijmar. Istinja is cleaning yourself with water, pure water, and istijmar is cleaning yourself with leaves, rocks, and all of those types of things. This thing, istijmar, is permissible from bowl of dhakar, from a man who urinates. There's a small area for him to clean, so he can use stones, he can use earth, he can use anything that's pure in itself and does the job of that's solid, pure, does the job of removing the impurity without being too rough that it damages a person and is not something that is of great value or of great importance to people or the property of other people, or something that will be returned to a spot where other people are going to get najasa on them by walking past it. So you have this habit that some people might have of wiping something and then wiping their hands on the walls, which you see in some places where they have smears of people who've cleaned themselves on the walls, is not something that is part of our practice. So it's permissible to use istijmar for a man who urinates, but in other words, not for a woman. A woman who urinates cannot use istijmar, which in the modern form is usually with toilet paper. Kagha'id, in the same way as you can use istijmar for feces, for pooing, la ma kathiran intashar, but not that which spreads quickly over a large area. So like diarrhea or something which goes out in all directions. And that's the reason also why female urine is not permitted for that same reason, because it covers a much wider area when it comes out. And when that is the case, the only acceptable purification of removing all of the traces is water. In fact, the best way, the Messenger of Allah sallallahu alaihi wasallam, in fact, praised the Ansar for it, was to use both istijmar and istinja. You use istijmar to remove the physical traces of what comes out. And then you use istinja, water, to remove any residue and any smell that's remaining. That's the best methodology. Given the type of clothing that a lot of us wear, it's also a good idea to dry yourself again afterwards of that water. Are there any questions on that before we move on?
I think this might be obvious, yeah. But...
Yeah. Bismillah.
I'm sorry, go before Jafar. It's not a problem.
Yes, sorry, brother. So this might be obvious, but so vomiting or bleeding doesn't invalidate one's wudu.
No, they don't validate one's wudu.
Okay, thank you.
I just want to have a question, Sheikh, about the touching.
Yeah.
Like in Europe, it's happened a lot of times, you shake hands with the opposite sex. And when it happens, I must think that my wudu is nullified or not.
In the madhab of the only time that touching invalidates wudu is if you experience sexual stimulation or pleasure or excitement, or you intend it. So if you neither intend nor feel it, your wudu is not broken.
Oh, okay. Because sometimes I read that the touching is only intended between a female that is a part of your family, is maybe your wife. So I thought that every woman is outside your family.
Breaks your wudu if you touch anybody who you would normally, you know, feel pleasure towards, and that would be any woman who is not your mahram.
Okay. Barakallahu fik.
Who is above the age of puberty.
Yeah, okay. Shukran.
If you only pee, is a question here, do you just wash the penis or do you have to do istinja front and back? If you only pee, you only clean the front. We don't do istinja from wind. We only do istinja when some substance comes out of that area. So if urine comes out of the front, we have to clean the front. If who comes out of the back, we have to clean the back. We don't do it for wind or anything else of that nature. When it's sort of like liquid that comes out of the back, sometimes when somebody's a bit sick, then you would wash it from that because that's impure. Okay, so we'll move on to ghusl then, inshallah. Now that he's talked about the most commonly needed form of purification, given that the things that break it are very, very common indeed, going to the toilet, passing wind, sleep, etc., etc. and that is the purification from al-hadath al-asghar, which is wudu. He now moves on to the less common form of purification, which is the purification from al-hadath al-akbar, which is, he's going to go into exactly what is meant by that in a bit. But it is much less commonly needed because the things which break ghusl are much less common. We call this form of purification ghusl or irtisal. And in the same way that he went through with wudu, he goes through with ghusl. The fard first, the obligatory parts, without which it wouldn't be a ghusl. Then the sunnah parts that are necessary for you to do and never leave out, but that can sometimes, you know, be left out in times of when, you know, when the time is short or other things of that nature and don't impact the validity of the wudu. And then the mustahabbat, the recommended elements. So he says here, fara'id al-ghusli, or the fara'id al-ghusli, because both languages are used amongst certain peoples. Oh, there's another question here before we move on, asking about the istinja for women. Women are, just like men, permitted to use istijmar, but that's only for what comes out the backside. In terms of the front side, they use water and they wash the area wherever they suspect the urine will have come. So they get the water, they wash off the whole area on the front. There's no sort of salt and nutter, no shaking about in the same way, because they're different biologically in that way. You just get the water and you wash the surface of the area. You don't have to wash inside or anything like that. Faslun, section, furud al-ghusli, qastun yuhdatar. So he says here, section, the furud, the fara'id, the obligatory elements of ghusl are, he mentions four here, he mentions four fard elements for ghusl and four sunnah elements. The four fard he mentions here are qastun yuhdatar, which is a purpose that is present, that is brought into the presence of one's mind. In other words, and making an intention that you are remembering that intention. It is something that you are aware about. This is the important thing about intentions. Intentions are not simply words. You can say something without even thinking about what you're saying. The place of the intention is the heart. So you have to bring your intention to mind when you embark upon whatever action you're doing. So for example, if you're doing ghusl, you know, and you purposely engage upon a course of action that equals to that ghusl. You know you are doing ghusl. And with ghusl, the same type of thing as with the previous one that we talked about, the wudu, the same types of intention. You either intend the obligation of ghusl. I intend by this to meet the obligation of doing ghusl, or you intend to do something that is impermitted for you in your current state, for example, the prayer, or for example, if you're a woman who's been having a menstrual period, sleeping with your husband, or whatever it is, allowing that is enough to equate to an adequate intention. And finally, removing the state of ritual impurity from yourself. Then he mentions the next, fawrun, which again, the same as wudu, muwalat, doing it all in one go and not having a large delay between the various different elements. The same things apply with ghusl as apply to wudu, as he's going to mention in a little bit. Then the next one, umum ud-dalk. Umum, which means general or covering the whole area, ad-dalk, which is rubbing. We mentioned that for wudu. So for ghusl, you have to wipe every single part of your body that's on the outside. Every single part of your body that faces the outside must be washed, every part of it. And part of washing, as we said, is rubbing. And it doesn't have to accompany the pouring of the water, but there has to be enough residual wetness still on the place that you're rubbing that it constitutes washing. And takhleel al-sha'ar. So we mentioned with wudu that if your hair is tied up or you have sort of small numbers of hair bands, you don't have to release it all. And the water doesn't have to penetrate to the roots of that or cover each and every hair. not with ghusl. With ghusl, you have to make sure that the water reaches every single hair from the start of the bottom of the hair to the end of the hair and right to the roots. So if you've got your hair braided, then you have to remove those braids because water is not going to enter inside a braid. If you've got it loosely tied, for example, you've got it all gooped together and just a little bit tied, but the water can still reach everywhere, then you don't have to remove that. So long as the water can reach through the hair, and tahleel means putting your fingers through your hair to reach the roots, then you have met your obligation. Water has to reach to every part of your hair. So he explains how to do it. فَتَابِعِ الْخَفِيَّةِ So follow the hidden parts. So basically make sure that the water reaches to every part of the body that is easily accessible and that's not so easily accessible. That is easily seen. You just stand in a normal way and that bit is open to the elements when you're not clothed. Or is difficult to see because, for example, when you stand up, the place behind your between your legs and your buttocks has joins together, and there are bits of flesh that might be fold over each other that stop water easily accessing them. So he mentions all those things. Batabi il khafiya mithla rukbatain. So he says, like behind your knees, like your knees. He literally says, but that means the area behind your knees. Wal ibti. So the ibt is the underarms. You have to make sure the water reaches fully to your underarms. Warrufgha, which is when you have any part of your body where bits of flesh fold over onto each other, especially around the thighs, that's called rufgha. So making sure the water reaches between folds of flesh. Wabayn al-alyatayn, and between the buttocks. So you have to make sure that the water reaches between your buttocks to where your anus is, but you don't obviously go inside your anus, but it's that area between the buttocks must be washed. وَصِلْ لِمَا أَسُرَ بِالْمِنْدِيلِ So sometimes it's difficult to reach certain parts of your body. You're maybe not very flexible. Maybe you have short arms. You can't reach to the small of your back, for example. But if you're required to rub and wash every single part of your body, then how do you do it? So he says here, وَصِلْ reach لِمَا to what أَسُرَ is difficult بِالْمِنْدِيلِ with a cloth. So you could grab two ends of a cloth and wipe like that to reach your back, for example. You could use a loofah, or you could use like a brush with a handle so you can reach those difficult to reach bits. وَنَحْوِهِ كَالْحَبْلِ And the like of it, like a rope. So you could have a thick rope that you could make sure you could rub those areas or wash those areas that you can't reach with your hands. And if you don't have any implements, you can still find somebody else. He says, "Wattawkili," and you can make somebody else your wakil. You can ask somebody else to wipe those areas for you. In fact, in ghusl, unlike wudu, it's permitted to find somebody else to wash you and not do the washing yourself. If it's obviously in an area between the belly button and the knees, then you should only have somebody who you're allowed to be intimate with help you in washing those areas. But outside of that, for example, people often went to hammams and they would have somebody who would help wash them in the hammam and would say wash their back for them or whatever. That's perfectly acceptable.
What about like if somebody rubs their back against a wall, like in a shower, would that count?
Yeah, so long as the water goes on and rubbing has been done with whatever implement it is, even if it's a wall, so long as that constitutes enough to be washing, that would count. So, so sorry, there's been an interruption, just moving on. Sunan al-ghusl. So we'll move on to the sunan of ghusl, unless there's any more questions about the fara'id, which are quite self-explanatory. So he says, in this section, he talks about the sunan, the sunnas of ghusl, which are again four, and the mandubat or the mustahabbat, the recommended aspects of ghusl. And he does them all in this short section. So he says here, sunanuhu, basically they have the same sunnas, ghusl, as wudu. Because the areas that are sunnah in wudu are not on the outside of the body. Like it, the even though the mouth opens to the outside, it is an internal part of the body. So it's not a fard to wash it. So he says, sunanuhu madmada, washing out the mouth, rinsing out the mouth. But in, for ghusl, it's only once rather than three times. Ghuslul yadain bad'an, washing the hands first, again in the same way as wudu. It is sunnah to start by washing the hands before moving on to the rest of the ghusl proper. Wal istinshaq, and he uses the word for blowing water out of the nose to refer to the rinsing out of the nose, because if you're blowing water out of the nose, it's understood that you've already sucked it in. So that's also one of the sunnahs, in the same way as it is with wudu. Thuqb al-udhunayn. So the thuqb al-udhunayn are the holes of the ears. Why does he just mention the holes of the ears and not the whole ears? Because it's actually an obligation in ghusl to wash the ears, to wash the outside of the ears, not just to wipe them with water. So if you simply wipe your ears in the course of the ghusl part, the wudu part of your ghusl, you have to go back then and wash them properly, wash the outside of your ears in the same way that you might wash the face. But what about the inside of the ears? He says, well, the inside of the ears is not an obligation. It's a sunnah. So you wash inside your ears as well as a sunnah, but it's not an obligation. Mandubuhu, the recommended elements, al-bad'u bi-ghaslihi al-adha, starting with washing away the impurity. Now again, he's just said starting by washing the hands. So which starting is done first? Well, the hands are first, and then the washing away of impurity follows from that. But again, he mentions immediately after this another one that's done first, which is tasmiyatun, which is saying the basmala. So the way you do this would be you would start by saying bismillah while you're washing your hands, with the intention also in that first place, and then you would move on to washing away the impurity. So that's the first of the parts of ghusl proper, is washing away the impurity, which means washing the private area so you don't have to go back to that area again later. Tathlithu ra'sihi kada. Similarly, washing the head three times, each time washing it properly, not sort of a little bit and then doing it a little bit again, doing it a little bit again. No, each time is a proper pouring of water onto your head and washing to the roots. Then you do that twice and you do that three times. And that is recommended. Doing it once is enough to meet the obligation. Taqdeemu a'dha'i al-wudu'i qillatu ma. Then the next is doing the limbs of wudu first. And again, by first here, he doesn't mean completely first. He means after you've washed away the impurity. So basically now we have, you start by saying, by making your intention and saying, bismillah, I'm washing your hands. Then you go to your private region, which is maybe between your belly button and your knees, and you wash that region and you make sure there's no impurity on it. Then you go to the elements of wudu. You've already done your hands, so you don't need to do that. You would then go to your mouth, your nose, your face, your arms, you would wipe your head here in the same way that you do wudu, wipe your ears. And then if you're doing a sunnah ghusl, such as for Jumu'ah, or a mandub ghusl that's recommended, such as, for example, when you're going to enter into ihram, when you do those types of ghusls, you have to then do your feet straight away while you're doing the wudu, because the most important part of that ghusl is the wudu aspect, because that is it, what makes you pure to pray. You don't need ghusl. You're not in a state of major ritual impurity when you're doing a sunnah ghusl. Is that clear? But if you're doing a fard ghusl, it's best to leave the feet till the end. So that element, that aspect of the limbs of wudu is left, and that's because the water where you're doing it, the impure water is going to the ground and you're standing on it. So it's best to finish by washing that off at the end. Then he says, قِلَّةُ مَا, use a small amount of water. There's no real limit to this. As I said, with wudu, some people can use less water than others. Others require more wudu, more water. But it's important that you use enough water to fulfill all of the things that you need to do for your ghusl. And then not go to excess after that. بَدْءٌ بِأَعْلَى وَيَمِينٍ خُذْهُمَا. And then start with the highest and the rightmost, take them both. So basically, if you're doing ghusl, you've done your wudu parts, and now you're coming to wash your body. The next thing you do is you go and you wash your head. And if you haven't washed your ears while you're doing wudu, you wash your ears. That's the top, a'la, that's the highest. Then you divide your body into four quadrants. There's the upper right, upper left, lower right, lower left. You would do the upper right first, then the lower right, then the lower right, the upper right, then the upper left, then the lower right, and the lower left. Yeah, is that clear? And if you want to do the right side first, so you do the upper right and then the lower right, then the upper left and then the lower left, that's also fine. These are recommended things, they're not obligations. If you've done it out of order, you don't have to rectify it. تَبْدَعُوا فِي الْغَسْلِ بِفَرْجٍ ثُمَّ كُفْ. So when you're doing ghusl, you touch your private parts only at the beginning of it, before you've done the wudu aspect of your ghusl. Then he says, ثُمَّ كُفْ. So تَبْدَعُوا, you begin, fil ghasli, in your ghusl, بِفَرْجٍ, with your private area. ثُمَّ, then, كُفْ, stop, عَمَّسِهِ, from touching it, بِبَطْنِي, أَوْ جَنْبِ الْأَكُفْ, with the bottom, the inside, or the jamb, the side of your palm. And that applies to the fingers. So he says, أَوْ إِسْبُعٍ, or your fingers and thumb. So you can't touch it with the insides of your fingers and thumb, the inside of your palm, or the sides of your fingers or palms.
Sorry, now when it's saying the private, does that mean the whole area between the knees and the navel?
Well, I suggest, because it doesn't mean the whole area, but I suggest that if somebody is going to do their ghusl and they want to avoid touching that part of their body again, that when they do the part of washing away the impurity and washing the private area, they wash the entire area between the belly button and the navel so they don't come back to that area again and touch it again. So that would mean that would be the first thing that you do after washing your hands is wash between the belly button and the knees. Then you would do your wudu. Then you would wash your head. Then you would wash this area until the belly button, front and back. Then you would wash this area until the navel, front and back. Then you would wash from the knees to the ankles on the right-hand side, then the knees to the ankles on the left-hand side, and then your right foot, and then your left foot. That's what I would suggest. But so long as you don't touch your thing, you can just wash just the private area and then include those other bits with your later washing, that's fine. Then he says, ثُمَّ إِذَا مَسَسْتَهُ. But then if you did touch it, you weren't able to avoid touching it in the course of your ghusl. You accidentally brushed it, or somehow some part of your hand touched your penis. That's what he means by private part here. أَعِدْ مِنَ الْوُضُوءِ مَا فَعَلْتَ. Then repeat the wudu that you did if you want to be in a state of purity after that, that you can pray with it. If you don't repeat that wudu, then you can't pray with that ghusl. You have to do wudu again later. Is that clear? Mujib al ghusl. So the obligate. Is there any question from someone?
Yeah, I had a question. Probably should ask this earlier as well. But if somebody has like a bandage or a plaster, what's the procedure there? Do they pass their hand over that area, or do they avoid that area?
I'm going to finish today with a little bit of talking about plasters and kufs, which is not mentioned here. So if you don't mind, I can leave it till then, or do you want me to mention it now?
No, it's fine. You can mention it afterwards. Thank you.
Mujibat al-ghusl, the obligatory, the things that make Ghusl wajib. A mujib is something which makes something wajib. So what makes it necessary for you to do ghusl? And there are four things he mentions here, two which apply exclusively to women and two which apply to everybody. He says, mujibuhu haydun infasun inzal. The thing that makes it obligatory is number one, hayd, which is menstrual bleeding. And it's not the fact that you have menstrual bleeding that makes ghusl obligatory. It's when it comes to an end. That's when your menstrual bleeding ends, that's the moment that you are obliged then to do ghusl to purify yourself. Infas, which is postnatal bleeding, which is after a woman has given birth to a child, that there follows often a period of bleeding, which is somewhat similar to menstrual bleeding, but it goes on for a certain period of time, which is also considered to be something that when that comes to an end, you are required to do a ghusl. Then the next one he mentions here is inzal, which is basically ejaculation. That applies to both men and women. You know, when semen comes out of men, or in the process of sexual excitement, accompanied by sexual excitement, or a liquid comes out of women accompanied by sexual excitement, or due to sexual excitement. Maribu kamratin bifarjin isjal. So he mentions here the next one, which is marib, which is the disappearing of the kamra, which is the head of the penis, bifarj, into another private area. So here, this farj refers to front and back. It refers to the private area of women or men. I mean, it refers to sexual intercourse in any way that it is done, regardless of whether that is allowable in the law or not, regardless of whether there are other consequences of such sexual intercourse or not, with humans or with animals. Everything that is done that involves this, the male penis's head going inside of the sort of area of another being, means that ghusl is required. And it doesn't, the penis does not have to be erect for this. Even if the penis is limp and it does this, that's enough to make ghusl required. There's a lot of things relating to menstruation that are not mentioned here. I don't want to go into too much detail about it, but this is an area that women know their own bodies best, and they can recognize what this type of bleeding is. It is when the womb clears itself, the womb prepares itself for pregnancy. If that doesn't happen, the womb clears itself and that type of bleeding happens. There's a minimum period of time for it, which is a single amount of blood coming out. That's it, even if it's just for a minute. And the maximum length of time that this can happen is 15 days. So if a woman continues to bleed for longer than 15 days, that's not considered to be menstruation anymore. It also depends on how long a woman's regular period is and other factors of that nature. So I don't know if people really want to go into any more detail about it. If anybody has any specific questions on this, anything they particularly want to know about it, feel free to ask. But because it's not mentioned here in Ibn Ashir, I'm not going to go into great detail on exactly what it is. So are there any questions? Anything anybody particularly wants to know about this? So if you are in a state of menstruation, or you haven't, your menstrual period has ended and you've not yet had a chance to have a ghusl, what are you not allowed to do? He says, well, awwalani, that is menstrual bleeding and postnatal bleeding, mana al-wat'a ila, make sexual intercourse forbidden ila ghuslin, until the woman has a ghusl. This, by the way, applies regardless of whether the woman is Muslim or a woman of the book, because men are permitted, obviously, to marry Christian and Jewish women. If they are, and she has a menstrual period, the man is not allowed to sleep with her until she has a ghusl, even if her ghusl in some ways doesn't count because she's not got a real intention. Still, for the man, he's not allowed to sleep with her until she has a ghusl. There are other things that are forbidden in this period when somebody is menstruating. One of them is divorce. It's considered to be haram to divorce a woman while she's menstruating. Fasting, prayer, touching a mushaf, i'tikaf, all of these various things are other consequences of being in this particular state. Wal-akharani, Qur'an and Tala, and the final two make it impermissible to recite Qur'an. So if you're in a state of janaba, if you have had sexual intercourse, or you've had a wet dream, and you wake up in that state, you're not allowed to recite Qur'an. You can read, for example, the قُلْ أَعُوذُ بِرَبِّ الْفَلَقِ قُلْ أَعُوذُ بِرَبِّ النَّاسِ for protection, or you can read certain Quranic du'as, but specifically to recite Quran, you're not allowed to do it. وَالْكُلُّ مَسْجِدًا And both of them make it impermissible to enter a mosque. If you're in a state of janaba, or you're menstruating, you're not allowed to go into the mosque. Moreover, you're not allowed to, both in both cases, touch a mushaf. These are the two main consequences of being in these states of impurity. Sometimes you can pass through a mosque if it's the only access point for some other thing that you need to get to, or there's some particular time constraint that means that that's the only way to go through. But generally speaking, you're not allowed to go into a mosque if you're in either of these two states. By the way, as a follow-on from this, this is the reason why Imam Malik considers it haram for non-Muslims to enter the mosque, is because of their state of impurity. You're not allowed to be in that state of impurity in the mosque. That's one of the rights due to Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. Sir Yusuf?
One question. For mushaf, we intended also the Quran is translate, or with some explanation, or only the Quran with only Arabic scripture?
Generally speaking, they say it's only the one that's specifically considered to be the Quran, which is the Arabic. If you have a tafsir that has some of the Quran and has other bits, if the Quran is the major part, again, it's the same as the mushaf. If the tafsir is the major purpose of the book, and the Quran is the secondary part to it, the bit that's being explained, and the main book is the tafsir part or a translation, then that doesn't have the same ruling.
Okay, so we can touch it if we are in that state, we can.
I mean, obviously, if you have one of these mushafs that's half mushaf, half translation, it's better to avoid that. But if it's purely a translation, or if it's a tafsir and you have little bits of Quran that are quoted in the tafsir, that's fine.
Okay. Thank you.
وَالسَّهْوَ الْإِغْتِصَالِ مِثْلُ وُضُوءِكَ So if you forget some aspect of your ghusl, for example, you leave out washing your head, he says the ruling on this is the same as it was for wudu, مِثْلُ وُضُوءِكَ The same for your wudu. If you forget about it, and then you remember after a long period of time has passed, you simply wash the head and that's it, you've made it right. If a short period of time has passed, in fact, in this particular case, you would do the same because there is no specified order for ghusl. The tartib of ghusl, doing it in a particular order, is not even a particular recommendation. The important thing is making sure that the whole area is washed. It's recommended that you do the elements of wudu first, but that's not a sunnah or anything. If you don't get that right, it's ruined your ghusl. So he says here, if you forget something in your ghusl, it is the same ruling as with wudu, except for the fact walam tu'id muwal. So except for the fact that somebody who is still close to the time. He's still a muwal. He's still within the time where his limbs wouldn't have dried in a normal climate. He doesn't have to do anything that happened that comes after it. He doesn't keep on. For example, if he missed out the head, and he would normally then have gone on to the rest of his body, he doesn't have to do the rest of his body after washing his head. He just does the head, because that particular order is not a requirement. We're coming on to tayammum now. I'm just going to do a little bit more. I know some people want to leave, but I think we can do another 10 minutes if I have permission. So he says here, faslum fit tayammum. And now he's finished discussing the primary means of purification, which you might say the starter, the thing that we automatically go to. He now moves on to the secondary form of purification, which is a substitute for the primary. When the primary is unable to happen, this substitute can come and take its place, and only comes in certain circumstances that he mentions. And it does not, tayammum does not remove impurity. It simply suspends your impurity for a specific task that you have intended. And it continues to suspend it for as long as that task takes and anything that might be added onto that task. It's also legislated in the Quran, in the same ayah in which wudu is legislated. He says here, after talking about wudu that we mentioned last time, يَا أَيُّ الَّذِينَ آمَنُوا إِذَا قُمْتُمُوا إِلَى الصَّلَاةِ فَاغْسِلُوا وُجُوهَكُمْ وَأَيْدِيَكُمْ وَإِلَى الْمَرَافِقِ وَامْسَحُوا بِرُؤُوسِكُمْ وَأَرْجُلَكُمْ وَإِلَى الْكَعْبَيْنِ. After that, he says, وَإِنْ كُنْتُمْ مَرْضَىٰ أَوْ عَلَىٰ سَفَرٍ أَوْ جَاءَ أَحَدٌ مِّنكُم مِّنَ الْغَائِطِ أَوْ لَامَسْتُمُ النِّسَاءَ فَلَمْ تَجِدُوا مَاءً فَتَيَمَّمُوا صَعِيدًا طَيِّبًا فَامْسَحُوا بِوُجُوهِكُمْ وَأَيْدِيكُمْ مِنْهُ مَا يُرِيدُ اللَّهُ بِكُمْ الْيُسْرَ مَا يُرِيدُ اللَّهُ لِيَجْعَلَ عَلَيْكُمْ مِنْ حَرَجٍ وَلَكِنْ يُرِيدُ لِيُطَهِّرَكُمْ وَلِيُتِمَّ نِعْمَتَهُ عَلَيْكُمْ لَعَلَّكُمْ تَشْكُرُونَ. So he says here, if you are sick, Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala says, or on a journey, or one of you is visited by the need to go to the toilet and go and poo, or you have touched women, فَلَمْ تَجِدُوا مَاءً, and you can find no water. So you've lost your state of wudu, and you might be ill, might be because you're ill, might be traveling, but you've lost your state of wudu. فَلَمْ تَجِدُوا مَاءً, and you cannot find water. فَتَيَمَّمُوا, do tayammum on a صَعِيدًا طَيِّبًا, on pure good earth, is the literal translation. فَمْسَحُوا, wipe, the way you do it, فَمْسَحُوا بِوُجُوهِكُمْ, wiping your faces, وَأَيْدِيكُمْ, and your arms, مِنْ, from that pure earth. مَا يُرِيدُ اللَّهُ لِيَجْعَلَ عَلَيْكُمْ مِنْ حَرَجٍ. Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala does not want to make things hard for you, does not want to make things to be problematic for you. وَلَكِنْ يُرِيدُ, but once, لِيُطَهِّرَكُمْ, but once to make you pure. وَلِيُتِمَّ نِعْمَتَهُ عَلَيْكُمْ, and to complete his blessing on you. لَعَلَّكُمْ تَشْكُرُونَ, so that perhaps you will be thankful. So this is the basis that we have for tayammum from the Quran. Referring to what is said in the ayah, Ibn Ashir himself says, فَصْلٌ لِخَوْفِ ذُرٍ أَوْ عَدَمِ مَا, section, because of fear of harm, أَوْ عَدَمِ مَا, أَوْ lack of water, أَوْوِضْ, substitute, من الطهارة, for tahara, in other words, water-based tahara, and this means both wudu and ghusl, التَيَمُّمَ. So make tayammum your substitute for your wudu or your ghusl. When you fear that you will be harmed by water, so this doesn't mean that only that water is a harmful thing for you, but it means that if you use the water and you say you have a flu, it's going to delay your recovery from your flu or make your flu worse, that will be grounds enough. Or the water will make whatever condition that you are actually get worse. And if you have a valid reason to think that, whether it's on prior experience or whether it's on doctor's advice, then you would not do wudu. Khawf can also refer to other things, such as fear of thieves or wild animals if you go out to the place where you know there is water. And you know, also fear of missing the time of the prayer sometimes on occasion, but this is not in this specific thing. Khawfi dhur. Or lack of water. So when you actually have no water, there's no water with you, or you have water, but you can't really use it. For example, you need it to drink, you need it for your animals to drink from, you need it for those who rely on you to drink from it, or you have water, but you can't access it, or there is water nearby, but you are blocked from getting it by the presence of a hungry lion that's eating people. If you have any of that, then instead of your ghusl, you do this tayammum. وَصَلِّ فَرْضًا وَاحِدًا, and you pray a single fard with it. وَإِن تَصِلْ, and then after having prayed that fard, if you connect to it, جَنَازَةً, a janazah prayer, وَسُنَّةً, and a sunnah, bihi, with it, تَحِلْ, it is fine, it's permissible. وَجَازَ لِلنَّفْلِ ابْتِدَاءً, and it's also permissible for you to do tayammum specifically for a non-obligatory thing, such as, for example, to pray the two rakats of Fajr before praying Subh, or to recite Quran when you touch a mushaf when you're not in a state of wudu. It's permissible to use to do tayammum for that if you have either of these things, you fear harm or you have lack water. وَيَسْتَبِيحُ الْفَرْضَ, and you can, and it makes permissible the fards, the five daily fards. لَلْجُمُعَةَ قَاذِرٌ صَحِيحٌ. So if you are not traveling, you're resident, and you're healthy, but you want to go to Jumu'ah, and suddenly you realize that the imam's about to pray Jumu'ah, and if you go and do wudu, you're going to miss the Jumu'ah. Can you rush into the Jumu'ah and do tayammum and pray? That's the question here. He says no. If you're going to miss it because you haven't got time to do wudu, or you haven't got water on you and you won't be able to get the water in time to do it, then you just pray dhuhr. You can't substitute tayammum or wudu in that case. If you actually have no water at all, there's no way to find water, then you can pray Jumu'ah with tayammum. But it's only when you're trying to do it just purely to catch the Jumu'ah prayer, because you'll miss the Jumu'ah prayer. If you go and do wudu, then you can't do it for that purpose. Whereas, for example, if you were at the end of the time of dhuhr and you had to catch the time, you could do tayammum if there was only enough time for you to do tayammum in those cases. Well, are there any questions? We can leave it there, inshallah. If we don't, we'll go on to the fara'id of tayammum next time.
Maybe I didn't understand, but so yeah. If that person do the tayammum, even if it's better that don't do that for praying Jumu'ah, that wudu is nullified or is only a makruh?
No, if you do tayammum for Jumu'ah, it doesn't count, is what he's saying. And your Jumu'ah will be invalid and you have to go and do wudu and do dhuhr. This is for somebody who's not avoiding water because he is going to be made sick by the water or he has any fear of it harming him. Yeah, this is somebody who is a resident upon whom Jumu'ah is obligatory. If you're a traveler, Jumu'ah is not obligatory on you and you do two rakats anyway. Somebody who is a resident and somebody who is healthy. The reason he's not doing wudu, again, it's not because he completely lacks water, but again, it's to catch the Jumu'ah. That's not permitted.
Okay.
That's what he's saying.
One other question. Ghusl, is it obligatory on Jumu'ah or not?
No, it's not obligatory. It's a sunnah. So it's a recommended thing. And if you do a sunnah ghusl, as I said, you have to intend to fulfill the sunnah or to make yourself in a state whereby you are pure to do the action you're intending it for. But you can't intend to remove a state that's not on you. You can't intend to remove a state of major ritual impurity of janaba when you're not in janaba. So you only have two intentions that you can do for sunnah ghusls.
Okay. Thank you.
Barakallahu. But it's not obligatory, no.
Assalamu alaikum. Is the intention for Jummah, is that to go to the prayer, or is it because it's the Friday? For the intention
you're talking
of
about for the ghusl?
Yes.
It has to be for the prayer, for the prayer itself.
Yeah.
Okay. Because it has to be to get yourself in a state of purity for an action where you are required to be pure. It's not, you don't have to be pure just to go to the mosque.
You have to be pure to pray the Jummah prayer. Yeah,
you have to be pure to pray the Jummah prayer, but you don't have to be pure to go to the mosque.
Yeah.
You have to simply be pure for the part of it, which is an obligation on you. So if you're going to make the intention that the ghusl makes you in a state for something, that you're able to do something, that something has to be wudu has to be obligatory on it, purity has to be obligatory for it.
So if you don't go to the masjid, you don't do it at all on a Friday. You can't do it with that intention.
You can't do Jummah at home. And if you're not going, if you're not going to the Jummah, there's no requirement for you to do any ghusl for the Jummah. It is a sunnah that's connected to to actually going to the mosque. Bir rawah ittasala, as they say, connected to the rawah, to the going out to the mosque.
If you're in a state of janaa and that you have no access to water, and time for the prayer comes, you do tayammum, and your prayer is your prayer valid?
Yeah, 100%.
Yeah. So that's an exception to not being able to recite the Quran when you.
Yeah, no, but tayammum temporarily lifts the state of impurity. So even if you're in Geneva, if you've got no water or you can't use water, and the prayer time comes, you have to purify yourself somehow. So you do tayammum. We'll next time go into how to do tayammum and what you can do tayammum with. But we'll leave it there. There's another question here. How about you are in a public place and can't do wudu because of all of the other people around you? Again, if it's to do with fear, if you actually fear for your well-being because of those other people around you, then yeah, it's a valid reason. Sometimes these fears are not realistic though. But sometimes, you know, if you do it in those places, you can get a lot of people who then come and have a go at you. And especially if you're a woman, that can be And also you'll be exposing if it's the only place where you can, expose your aura to people in order to do it there, then this also can be problematic. But I suppose you could always hold your scarf and do it under it. But there are issues about doing it in those sorts of places. Maybe we need more places out in public where we can do wudu easily and petition for that to be made so. Any more questions? We've still got a fair bit of tayammum to go, so I'm not going to go through it all now because I think the last lesson went on a little bit too long. Even though we've only got tayammum to go and then we're going to start prayer, we'll finish off tayammum and then we'll do a chunk of prayer next time, inshallah. Okay. بسر وبركاته بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم الحمد لله رب العالمين الرحمن الرحيم ملك يوم الدين إياك نعبد وإياك نستعين اهدنا الصراط المستقيم صراط الذين أنعمت عليهم غير المغضوب عليهم ولا الضالين آمين اللهم صل على سيدنا محمد عبدك ورسولك النبي الأمي وعلى آله وصحبه وسلم تسليما سبحان ربك رب العزة عما يصفون وسلام على المرسلين والحمد لله رب العالمين Thank you all again for being here and I hope to see you all next week inshallah Assalamu alaikum.
Inshallah, assalamu alaikum, Sheikh.
Thank you, Sheikh.
See you soon, inshallah.